All right, so now on to the gospel. So in this text, we find Mary and Jesus and the disciples at a wedding reception. They've been invited to attend this reception, which is in the village of Cana. And this village was about 9 miles from where Jesus grew up. So, you know, they're walking everywhere, so it's a bit of a distance. And all Jewish weddings in Jesus' day took place on Wednesday at dusk. And it began with the groom and the groomsmen walking to the bride's house, where they would enter and they would then have the ceremony. And at the conclusion of the ceremony, with torches lit, because by now it is dark, they would make their way, the bride, the groom, the families, and all those who had attended the ceremony. They would go outside and they would process to the groom's house. And once the procession at the groom's house, it was time for the reception. Now, the expectation is that the bride and groom would have this open house and provide hospitality for all of their guests. Not that different from what we do, right? We have a reception for our guests. That's kind of a common thing. But the difference is they were expected to do this for 7 days. Every evening for 7 days, they would provide hospitality to their guests. So that part is very different from what our wedding traditions are, or at least mine. I've never been at a 7-day reception. Some go past midnight, maybe you could count as 2 days, but never 7 days, come on. But despite these differences, I think anyone who's been part of planning a wedding knows that there are a ton of details that need to be tended. And everyone knows that no matter how much planning you do, there are always things that don't go quite the way you had hoped. They go wrong. And there's a lot of behind-the-scenes drama that your guests know absolutely nothing about. But running out of food or beverages is something that the guests would absolutely know happened, right? They wouldn't have any food or beverage. Now, to understand the significance of running out of wine at this wedding in Cana, we need to realize and remember that Jewish culture was ordered by shame and honor. So if you shamed your family, oop, down you go. Honor your family, up you go. And that was the way it was. And the Jewish tradition greatly valued hospitality. So if you ran out of wine, as this case is recounted, it would have flown in the face of providing hospitality, but even worse, it would have brought shame on the family. It would have been a social disgrace that would have been remembered and held against that couple for the rest of their married life. Now, Mary, Jesus, and the disciples, they are guests at this wedding. They have nothing to do with the planning or any of that. They are guests. And we have no idea what Mary's relationship is with the bride and groom, what Jesus' relationship, how the disciples, we have no idea about any of that. Sure, we can speculate all we want, but the reality is we absolutely do not know what their relationship is. But still, Mary comes to Jesus and says they have no wine. She doesn't beg Jesus or compel Jesus to intervene on behalf of the couple. She just says they have no wine. Now, Jesus, his response to me, it seems like he's a little unconcerned. He's thinking, this is not my problem. It's not our business. And so I kind of would imagine he's sort of saying, yeah, so what do you want me to do about this? This is not part of my Father's plan. It is not time for me to reveal myself. Now, Mary hears his response, but she still tells the servants to do whatever they're told, and then she just walks away. We don't hear from her again in John's gospel until she is at the foot of Jesus' cross. So what is it that we are to learn from this text? Well, the first thing is, when Jesus turns the water into wine, some saw and some didn't, right? So the servants know this happened. Mary knows this happened. The disciples know this happened. But the other guests, the bride, the groom, the steward, they know nothing about it. But even though they're unaware, this miracle still happened. And I think that the purpose of the story is not the miracle in and of itself, but it's about the abundance that this miracle provides. An abundance of God's love and care and God's desire to be in relationship with us. The fact that Mary came to her son with this urgent request, that reminds us that we too can bring our concerns to Jesus. And in fact, that we should share our concerns with Jesus. Jesus invites us to give him our cares and our concerns. Jesus has things under control. Unlike us, who sometimes try to depend on ourselves, and then we just start spinning out of control. And then Mary, again, her example, she has a humble heart, and she clearly just resigns herself to God's will. When she walks away, she doesn't know what Jesus is going to do, but she just walks away. She resigns with her humble heart, and she just says, this is God's will. And she trusted that God was going to be helpful. It shows us that if we're in need, that we could do what Mary did. Go to Jesus, take care of our needs. Jesus will take care of our needs, both great and small. This same Lord who turned water into wine is concerned with the things that trouble us. We should never be afraid and always bring our concerns to Jesus. And then we need to remember, Jesus didn't stay in Cana. At the end of the story, he moves on. He's not there for 7 days. He doesn't stay and celebrate this miracle and be, woohoo, you know. It's not out in the open. Jesus knows that human nature doesn't remember miracles for very long. I'm guilty of this myself over the course of my life. We ask God to intervene. We ask for a miracle. And even when God grants it, we may not recognize it. And it's like we're telling God, grant us this, and then I can trust you forever. If you will just do this thing, if you will just grant this miracle, then I'll believe and I'll trust. We're asking for some kind of sign to make us trust God. But the thing about miracles is they only make people believe temporarily. And when kind of the magic of that moment, the awe of that moment wears off, so will the belief. Real faith isn't developed that way. Human nature wants a miracle and another miracle and another miracle and another and another and another, right? We just want what we want. But real faith is trusting in God for who God is, not for what God can do. God is the God who loved us before we were born. And like Mary and the disciples, if you're going to believe, you will believe before you see a miracle. And we depend on the Holy Spirit for that. In the first lesson from 1 Corinthians, it said, it is only by the Spirit that we confess Jesus is Lord. Now, seeing a miracle does encourage a believer, and it nurtures a budding faith. It might build on a faith that already exists, but faith doesn't start with the miracle. We need to cultivate humble hearts, and when we see miracles or healings or an answered prayer, we need to take time and rest in gratitude to God. And not get caught up in what happened or how it happened or why it happened, but instead remember who made it happen. God can make ordinary, mundane things in life, and he can take them and make them extraordinary. It is my prayer that we live our lives in gratitude to God, the God who makes all things possible, and that the Holy Spirit will open our eyes and our hearts to notice the miracles that happen around us every single day.